He ran all over North America with the Syracuse Orange, the National Football League, and the Canadian Football League. Robert Drummond is back on the field, analyzing the gridiron right now with Dan Tatora.
We're back on the field here with Dan Tatora on WakeUpCallDT.com and your Sports DT app on your iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, and all of your smartphones through Google Play Store. Here with Rob Drummond of the NFL, CFL, and the Syracuse Orange. And we're going to stay on the field. We're going to talk some different things here for you on the field covering Syracuse and the NFL. But we're going to branch out a little bit because Rob and I off the air have had a conversation that probably should have recorded. So talking a little bit of everything today. But first off, with Syracuse, they go to NC State and they get a victory. And what I took from this is Syracuse not getting a lot of respect, picked to finish 6th out of 7th in their division. And you have a new head coach, you have a new quarterback, you bring in these other new coaches. And Scott Schaefer, within 2 games, is 500, 1-1 in the ACC and above other teams, is above the NC State team and above, you know, a Boston College who played Clemson very well. But what did you take away from this? Because for me, I think Syracuse fans have to be happy that this early in the ACC that Syracuse is in now, they already are 1-1. And I don't think that that was the thought that was going to happen. I think people expected there to be a few more losses.
I think coming into this game, wait a minute, I'll go back to the Clemson game first. Syracuse established in the Clemson game something that I think they're going to do very, very well this year and in years to come, and that's a ground game. You know, as you had said, prior to the beginning of the season, the ACC is a passing league, and it is a passing league with the quarterbacks. You know, from Florida State, you know, Taj Boyd to Clemson, you know, the Duke quarterback. You know, all these kids that can go out there and basically throw the ball and throw it well and put up points and things of that nature. But Syracuse did what basically old school football is about. It's smash mouth football. It's old school Big Ten football. It's grinding out, get the tough yards on the ground, you know, and demoralize the team. That's what gives a team the identity. Syracuse's identity right now is their ground game. The ACC is not, is shocked right now at what they can do on the ground. 300-plus yards against Clemson. 300-plus yards against NC State. Syracuse has established itself as one of the dominant running teams, not just in the ACC, but in the nation. So if they can go out there and continue this for the rest of the season, or right now just continue this for the next game down at Georgia Tech, they'll be a team and a force to reckon with. I think they've established their identity with the ground game. Go out there and let these teams now adjust to you.
And this is something that I had stated that I thought Syracuse, this was their best strong suit, even before the season started, knowing that it was a passing league, going down to ACC Media Day in Greensboro and hearing them talk about that, hearing coaches get asked about the fact that, you know, 500 passing yards, 400 passing yards, how do you defend against it? And all I took from that was being there, sitting in Greensboro, hearing all these coaches talk about passing and about quarterbacks and who's the best quarterback. What I took out of that was, is Syracuse skating by? Are they flying low on the radar? Are people not paying attention to Jerome Smith and Prince Tyson Gully and what they can do? And even outside of that, seeing that when George Morris is healthy in the kick return game, Devontae McFarland getting a touchdown this season, Adonis Amin Moore when he gets his opportunities, Clay Cleveland catching out of the backfield. So to me, this was their strong suit going into the season. It was the thing that was going to carry them. You have a new quarterback. You're trying to figure out what works. So to me, what made the most sense was to run the ball. Mm-hmm. And seeing that they've bought into that and going up against, when you go up against a third-ranked team in the country and you show their weakness, you might not beat a team, but I think, and you talk about moral victories, do they exist or not, but in the sense of the Clemson game, you've established with the rest of the country their weakness. Mm-hmm. You took out of them what they're not doing right. Every single unbreakable, impenetrable, invincible object has a weakness. Mm-hmm. You just have to find it. And Syracuse exploited Clemson's inability to attack the run, which shows where they're at as opposed to other teams in the ACC, because everybody's calling Clemson, Florida State the best.
Correct.
Syracuse hasn't played Florida State yet, but if Clemson's the best and Syracuse can get 300-plus yards on them, that's a really good day for a running game. You know, 200 is a pretty good day. So I think what Syracuse is establishing right now is, yeah, altogether, it's taking some work to get things right. But as far as running the ball, I think the ACC, just like I thought in the preseason, has a force that they're going to have to reckon with and figure out how they're going to go up against it, because it's not going to be easy. And even teams like NC State that are probably watching the run after Clemson, they couldn't stop it either.
You know, it's a great showing by Syracuse and Coach Shapers and his staff, you know, to be able to go out there and run the ball like they did. You know, me and you both know they could run the ball because they ran the ball very well in the ACC, or excuse me, Big East last year.
Yeah.
But I think that for recruiting purposes, this is huge. The simple fact that Syracuse is going to the ACC and run the ball as well as they did the last couple of games. If I'm a recruit now, especially if I'm a running back, or I'm thinking, wow, I can go to Syracuse and, you know, and be a part of this tradition. If I'm a wide receiver, you know, I can say to myself, it's like, wait a minute, wow, they got such a strong run game. Now I could possibly go up there and make the receiving game that much better. So now we make more of a complete team. If I'm a defensive back, while they run the ball so much, teams are going to start throwing the ball more to try and catch up. If I'm a great defensive back, I can go up there because a lot more plays are going to come my way now. The whole recruiting process and how these kids think and what a team does really factors into their choosing schools. So what Syracuse is doing right now, granted, they lost at Clemson, but the simple fact that they were able to ground the ball out and be noticed, not just in the ACC, but nationally, for what they accomplished the past 2 weeks, is going to do great for the recruiting and for them going forward in the ACC.
I think that that's a great point that you brought up, that not only does a good running game tell recruits, guess what, I want to go there, I want to be part of that, because we think about it, Jim Brown, Ernie Davis, Floyd Little, Rob Conrad with positive moments wearing the number 44, outside of the number 44, Michael Owens, mm-hmm. yourself. There's a lot of guys that were able to do wonderful things, big things. You having an undefeated season with Michael Owens and yourself fighting to get positioning on the ground to put your team in a good situation to carry the team if need be. So Syracuse has always been known for running. Mm-hmm. They've always been known for a ground game. But I think that in the past few years and in the 21st century, it was lost a little bit. And I think it was safe to say that who was expected to be the best wasn't really what people had hoped that they would be.
I mean, it's funny. I was watching Time Capsule, which lets you know how old I am again, on Time Warner Sports the other night. And we were, it was actually my old 1988 team. We were playing Navy. You know, and it was down in Annapolis, Maryland. You know, great game. We ended up like blowing Navy out. But the simple fact that, I mean, I watched Daryl Moose Johnson. It was probably like a 7 or 8 yard run, and I just said to myself, "Wow, you know, what a strong, tough, hard run Syracuse run." And then Michael Owens carried the ball, another hard, you know, 7 or 8 yard run, another tough run, and I was like, and then I carried the ball on a series, and I said to myself again, "You know, wow, that was a very tough, hard court, you know, 5, 6, 7 yard run." Then I thought for a minute, I was like, "You know what? That just exemplifies what Syracuse University football is, especially from the ground game, especially from the running back position. You know what? Hardcore, salty earth runners who go out there and get it done when they put that orange and blue on. You know, and I think that's what the current Syracuse University football running back, you know, have gotten to. You know, they've gotten to that hardcore, salty earth, ground the ball out, you know, and then let everything else dictate around that. When you can run the ball, you can establish identity, you can make your team that much better. Running is about attitude. Passing is finesse. I call it like I see it. You know, when you pass the ball as a receiver, you can catch it and fall down. But when they hand you the ball, you have to fight through 11 other guys on the other side of the field who are trying to take your head off and get as many yards as you possibly can to make your team successful to get a first down. That's what running is about. Running is an attitude play. And when you go out there and you do it well, you set the tone for the rest of the defense. You set the tone for the rest of the team. And that's what Syracuse is doing right now.
When you look at Syracuse in the past 3 seasons, DeLon Carter, Antoine mm-hmm. Bailey, Jerome Smith, all 1,000-yard rushers. In my mind, and it's no offense to the work of DeLon or Antoine, mm-hmm. Jerome Smith is the best 1,000-yard rusher that Syracuse has had in a long time because he's gotten better.
He has gotten better, you know, year in and year out. And the thing I like about Jerome Smith that really, like, you know, keeps me high in this young man, it's his heart, his desire, his will to never give up, the way he just punishes runner when he wants to run. Granted, I think going forward for him, he needs to work on his top-end speed. He doesn't have the speed to break away and pull away and run for long touchdowns. Granted, albeit he had a long run in the Clemson game, but I think a few other factors happened in that. But if you look at his overall top-end speed, it's not that good. But every other intangible that, you know, that this young man needs, he has. You know, and it's just a very, very a lot of fun to watch him run.
And I think that that's the area that he was working on going into this season, and seeing him break through the pile and outrun everybody in practice left me believing in the fall, okay, this guy can do a little bit more now. He can get out there. What I like about him is that once he broke into the open field, when he's getting tackled, he covers the ball. He knows that when there's a guy coming, I have to protect this. And he doesn't protect it with one hand. He protects it with two. Mm-hmm. Hand over hand, holding on that one under, one over, mm-hmm. making sure that the ball is secured. So I agree with you that once he broke away, mm-hmm. other guys would have been in the end zone.
Yes.
At the same time, once he broke away, other guys are finesse guys, yes. and they're not protecting the ball.
Well,
so there are some positives there.
He's a very instinctive runner, which lets you know he's very well coached. You know, as you said, once he gets in the open field, you know, he's running down, and once he gets caught or once guys are coming up, he knows to cover the ball up and not fumble. He's not a guy that fumbles the ball a lot, which is him or Tyson Gulley. None of the running backs really fumble the ball a lot, which lets you know they're very well coached. But he's the type of runner who's fun to watch. It's going to be interesting to watch him the rest of this year. And as with me, Mike Malone, and Daryl Johnson, I think this current crop of running backs really complement one another. You know, they fit each other's style. They fit each other's mold. They get along on and off the field, you know, so that's very huge for your teammates, you know, whether you be a wide receiver, whether you be a DB, whether you be a running back, the fact that you can get on as good on off the field as you do on the field is a great thing, and I think it bodes well for Syracuse.
With Syracuse going forward, being on the road, going down to Georgia, mm-hmm. and playing up against a Georgia Tech team, this is something with the Orange that they've shown that when Clemson came in town that defensively, obviously, they struggled, but we talked about the running game. When they go on the road against NC State, you have a new head coach as far as NC State's concerned, and you have a new head coach, even though Scott was with the team as a defensive coordinator, new versus new. When you had that situation on the road, a lot of people will agree, and I don't know if you will, but playing on the road, obviously, to me, is more difficult because, yes, Syracuse fans travel, but when you're on the road, it's not your home. You don't know, especially in the ACC, these guys haven't played in these arenas, so you don't know what to expect. You don't know how loud it's going to be. You don't know the setup. You don't know where the noise is going to come from. So having the experience on the road of beating NC State, what does that do to this team, you being a guy who's won on the road before? What does going into a place you've never been in, beating a team the first time around, what does that do when you go forward to a Georgia Tech and on from there?
Honestly, personally, I think playing on the road really means nothing to these guys. You know, because as a player, and I can really speak for myself and some of the teammates that I've had over the years, it's like, you know what, you get more angry playing on the road because you're not home. And for the simple fact is, you know, you're miserable about having to travel, you're miserable about having not be able to stay in your own bed, you're miserable about a whole lot of things. So your first mindset is to take it out on the other colored jersey that's lined up across from you as soon as that whistle blows. You know, so my first thought whenever I was playing a road game was I was going to seek and destroy anything in front of me because I was mad at the things, the conditions and everything we had to do as far as traveling and getting the per diem and doing everything, keeping me out of my own bed. So now these opponents are going to take I'm going to take it out on them. But the whole mindset is when you go on the road is you know at some point you have to control the crowd. And what's the best way to control the crowd in a football game? The ground game. You know, because the ground game, it eats the clock up so you can keep a good offense off the field, and it basically lets you establish identity as far as being a more aggressive, being a tougher team. It allows your linemen to go out there and get physical and throw these guys around and move them and get their confidence up. It allows that defense to be able to understand that they're going to be in for a long game, you know, whether they're home or not. But the one thing that can really help you, help the opponent on a road game is a crowd. You got to control the crowd. It's very, very tough when you're on the road, especially being down in Georgia with all the Georgia Tech fans being down there. It's going to be a hostile crowd for Syracuse. If you can take the crowd out of the game, the 12th man is gone. You're going to go out there and establish your identity and force your will on the opponent. So that's one thing Syracuse has to do is take the crowd out of the game.
Who's the toughest crowd that you had to play in front of?
Ooh, toughest crowd I had to play in front of? in front of, I would have to say Penn State, hands down by far. When you turn around and you're looking up, you know, 90,000+ fans, and you're wondering, like, oh my God, you know, you see a sea of white, and you say to yourself, it's like, you know what, we're going to die. It's a humbling experience, but you know what, at some point you turn around, and then as I said before, like I said, you know what, I'm not going to take it out on the fans because there's too many of them, but you know what, the 11 players on defense will line up on the other side, I can take it out on them because they're in front of me and I get to hit them. They're trying to hit me, but they don't realize I'm trying to hit them, but I'm 2-2 against Penn State, so I have no complaints.
Ron Artest decided that you can hit the fans. You know, you can go after them. Did you ever have a moment where fans got too out of line?
Yes. The reason I don't like the Cowboys and the reason I don't like the Giants is because their fans there are, I know Eagles fans are bad, and our folks, and
the city of brotherly hate.
I get that. I understand. I know that. But you know what? They were my fans, so I can't say anything bad about Eagles fans. But Cowboys fans and Giants fans are some of the worst fans I've ever encountered in my entire football life. I mean, they're just brutal.
What was it about them that was so brutal?
It's just, maybe they just don't like the Eagles. That's what I figured, because they were just on me. I mean, out of all the players on the sideline, you know, Randall Cunningham standing there, Reggie White is standing there, Seth Turner's over there, Eric Allen's right there, Jerome Brown's right there. Why me? I'm a little guy amongst these stars, and these two guys during one Giant game were just brutally just picking on me to the point where it's just that I couldn't take it anymore. I started walking over there to beat him up before the police officer and security guy stopped me. Like, Robert, you can't do that. But, oh, and then the same thing at the Cowboys game. I'm like, I'm amongst all these stars. Why are you picking on me? Leave me alone. Bother these guys, you know? But then, you know, it's all in fun. We understand that. But it's like, you know, the Cowboys fans and Giants fans are brutal. But I have to say one more fan. Bills fans are brutal also.
So,
but they have a reason to be.
What's the reason about the Bills just losing too much?
They lose all the time. They're, you know, they're used to losing. At least the Cowboys and the Giants over the past couple of years have had, well, not Cowboys as much, but had Super Bowls. But Bills have never had a Super Bowl. They're like a, you know, like a bad car, 4 blown-out tires, 4 blowouts. So, okay, sorry for the Bills fans.
When you encountered these moments, what kept you, and like you said, a cop kept you at one point, but what kept you focused on a game? Because people obviously go to the games, and a lot of people listening right now, I find it very hard to believe if you haven't been to a game before, and I've been to plenty, and even though, and people know this about me if you've ever listened before, read anything that I do, I'm a fan first.
Yes.
So I'm going to enjoy being there where, you know, wherever I am. If they put me in the press box and they said that's going to be on the top of the dome and you're going to have to poke a hole and look, mm-hmm. I would do it. I love the games where I sat with my dad in the 300 level and looked down at little players just because my dad was there. And, you know, I appreciate my dad always being around and my mom, too, that came out to the games who hated walking up the hill but would definitely make the trek. So when you look at those moments that were so difficult for you, what kept you composed and focused? Because I've sat in crowds before, even with fans of the team that I was cheering on, and I've looked around at people and said, you know, yeah, you're wearing the same shirt that I'm wearing, but how dare you?
Yeah.
How do you stay focused? How did you stay focused from the player's perspective? Because so many people see it from the fan perspective, but very few people see it when you're on the court or on the field looking out going, I can't believe that guy just said that.
You know what? For me personally, I was blessed enough and gifted enough to be able to have the ability to go out there and play a game that I loved, you know, at a high level, and a lot of these so-called fans never could understand that. So to be able to go out there and have them cheer, yell, scream, get mad at me when I make a mistake or do anything of that nature, they would never be in that position and never have been in that position, so they don't get it. So for me, it's not just about being able to go out there and flex my will over an opponent, to be able to go out there and also outsmart them. You know, because during the week we practice an assortment of plays. You know, and during any crucial situation, any time, any play, and during the course of this game, as an athlete, you're going to have to make a play. Yeah. So you have to really concentrate on, you know, studying the defense, seeing the coverage, you know, seeing what front they're in, if they're shaded right, if they're shaded left. There's so many things that go on in one particular play in the NFL. You have to be cognizant of that. So you can't let a fan really get into your head and get you out of character, I should say. You have to go out there, be relaxed, be poised, be a professional, understand the game, you know, go out there and just run the play. And with these fans chirping in your ear and everything, guys are letting it to them, you know, really get distracted from the task at hand. So I never really tend to worry about that, because most 99.99% of the fans are yelling, screaming, and saying whatever they say, could never do or did what I did.
Is it true from the player's perspective, as I've seen from a fan's perspective, that the people that are the loudest, the rudest, and the most obnoxious are the ones that you look at and go, you would never be out on this field?
They're the ones who, for some reason, never in high school ever accomplished anything in their life, and now they got to take it out on guys who are successful. Yes, you're absolutely 100% correct.
Because I usually see that the ones that yell the loudest are the bitter people in the world.
Very bitter. I mean, bitterness will always cause you to yelling loud. I mean, or yell loudly. I mean, I do it at my own son's game. I don't yell a peep at a game, because I've been there before. And I sit around there, and I watch parents who are just screaming at the top of their lungs. I watch fathers and mothers who are just, you know, going, get in there and get that tackle. It's like, man, he's a kicker. So you don't understand the game. What are you screaming for? But it's always interesting. But it's, you know what? As long as they're having fun, as long as they're not demoralizing someone else and taking the joy, I mean, from an opponent or a young kid in the game of that nature, let them have fun. But for the most part, 90% of them have no idea what they're talking about.
The Lambeau Leap.
Yes.
Something that obviously Green Bay fans appreciate. Certain Green Bay players have done the Lambeau Leap on the road, and they've gotten popcorn, beer thrown on them.
Yes.
What are your thoughts about having a celebration like that on the road and basically telling Bears fans, you know, we're going to leap in here? And how do you take that? Because obviously it's a tradition, the Lambeau Leap is something that's special, but on the road, when a player makes the decision to go out into a hostile crowd, potentially, what do you think about that?
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, playing the CFL, I remember one year, I mean, I'd come off a monster year. We won the Grey Cup and everything, you know, but I was usually the type of guy, I was like Barry Sanders. I would always walk over to the referee and just hand him the ball. Then one year, I mean, two of my roommates on the road were always telling me, it's like, no, Robert, let's just make this year fun. You know, when you get a touchdown, you know, just dance, do something, you know, like, you know, get the crowds going. So that year, we'd always do, we'd dance and do some kind of, you know, act in the end zone. Then, like, it was great for home games. Then the first couple of games, we did it on the road. But then, like, some of the fans would boo, this, or say this, that, and the other. But I said to myself, it's like, you know what? I told them it was Marcelo Simmons and Adrian Smith. And I told them, it's like, you know what, guys? You know, it will be great to do these things home. We can keep doing these homes and everything. And get our crowd going and keep the fans going. And keep the people, you know, abreast of what it is we're doing. But on the road, you know, let me just go back to being able to give the ball to the referee, because I don't want to disrespect that team. I don't want to disrespect their fans. And I want to show them that we appreciate this game and we're much bigger than that. And they both agreed. You know, so it was just something that when you do it and you're in a hostile environment, it's not worth it, because all you're going to do is, like, you know, it's basically pouring gasoline on a match that is already lit, and you don't want to do that. You know, just respect their fans, you know, respect their city, you know, respect their players, and, you know, and you can do it once you get into the locker room or wherever, but don't do it to where someone can see it and you're going to incite anything that goes bad.
Are you for or against, in the NFL, celebrating a touchdown? Are you for or against the fact that they can get penalized and that they can get fined for that? Do you think they should be able to celebrate?
Yes, I think they should be able to celebrate. It's a celebration. It's a great victory. As long as you don't do anything to mean or belittle the other team. If you do it amongst a group, amongst you and your own players or to your own fans, it's great. Once you turn to the team and you start pointing to the team or do anything derogatory or make them look stupid, then it should be a flag. But I do believe in celebrations.
What was the best celebration that you ever had?
It's hard to define them. I mean, like, a lot of them were just different dances. Some of them just stand. There's one on YouTube where Vince Carter was a good friend of mine, where Vince Carter would always do this thing after he dunked. He would just stand there and just stare up into the crowd. And I did that after one of our championship games. It's a YouTube run I had in the Grey Cup. And they're like, and all the kids now laugh, but they asked me, what were you doing? I was like, I don't know, Vince Carter's over there. But, you know, all the celebrations were in jest, but they were all in fun, and they were all for the love of the game. You know, it wasn't meant to demean anybody. It wasn't meant to make anybody look bad. You know, it was just something that you feel good at the time. Like, somebody jump up and yell yes when they make a good score. The exact same thing.
Now, my wedding's coming up, and you obviously know that you're invited. Mm-hmm. So, can I expect you to be on the dance floor?
Okay, I'll be on the dance floor. That's no problem. But if you expect me to do a dance or an intro dance or something, that's not happening.
So as long as you're left to do your own thing, no choreograph, just do what you need to do.
No choreograph, I'm good. I'm good.
What's the best celebration you saw another person do?
That's I mean, there are a lot of different celebrations. I mean, it depends on depends on the moment, depends on the person, depends on, you know, what team they're playing against. You know, any celebration after a touchdown against the Cowboys and Giants is a great one to me. You can stand there, and that's a great celebration against the Cowboys and Giants to me.
So let me ask you this. Terrell Owens did this when he played for the 49ers.
Yes.
He ran over and he stood at the center of the field on the Dallas Star.
Yes.
What do you think about, since you said any touchdown against the Cowboys or the Giants, when somebody scores a touchdown at Cowboys Stadium and stands on the Star, what do you think about that?
I think that was very disrespectful, and I was glad to see that DB, I forget who it was.
Roy Williams.
Who just came down and just absolutely destroyed him. I was happy to see that, you know, because those are certain things you just don't do.
With Roy Williams doing something like that and then Jerry Jones deciding he didn't want him on the team anymore, does that take away from a team because there's not many guys that are willing to come? I shouldn't say there's not many guys that are willing, but you don't see really anybody else that was going to go out there and hit the, and he went full force, ran down the field, hit him with his helmet, and just knocked the guy off. I mean, you talk about love for the Cowboys, it was there. When you get rid of a guy like that, does that take away from your team that you have this? I mean, because I know it's a business, but.
That's the thing. It's hard to take away from a team and anything you do when it's considered a business. You know, it's like, all right, the Baltimore Ravens, you know, they lost Ed Reed, you know. Major loss and everything, team leadership and everything, but it doesn't take away from the Baltimore Ravens because at the end of the day, it's a business. See, what people have to understand is, like, yes, you may love a team, yes, you may love a player, but just like anything else in corporate America, this is a business. And they're in it for what? They're in it to make money. They're in it to entertain, but they're in it to make money. Great entertainers come along all the time. Great athletes will come along all the time also. Does it take a little bit away of the leadership of your team? Yes, it does. But in the long run, does it hurt your team? No, it doesn't.
Before we finish up, I want to go back to being on the road for you. The 12th man, you said you have to control the crowd because that's important.
Mm-hmm.
When you can't control the crowd, how difficult is it to be on the field and hear what your quarterback was trying to say? I mean, because we talk about it from afar, but when you're literally standing on the field and you're right behind McPherson, how difficult was it for you? Were you standing there going, what the hell did he just say?
You know, a lot of times I didn't have to hear him to know where we were going to run because we ran it so many times in practice. So a lot of times, you know, he would call a formation, and then all you would do is just watch where the other guys lined up. Because eventually, one or two or three or four of the guys are going to hear the play that he's calling. You may not hear it because you're at a distance. I was farther away from Donnie and all the other guys, but they heard it. And so there's with all the practice coming in, all the reps coming in. You sit down there and you see this guy start going in motion, then all of a sudden you go back to, oh, I remember this play in practice, and then you remember actually what the play was. You may not remember the snap count, but you know enough and you're wise enough to know that when they move, you move. You know, so you know, you see a guy coming across in motion, you see the formation set up, and you're lined up in the eye formation, you know, I mean, all right, it's a dive play, because why? That's what we practice all week long. So it may have been tough to hear him, but we had hand signals, we had other signals, you know, that we didn't have to use sound in order to be able to get a play.
Is that really, when you can't quiet down a 12th man on the road, is that really what you need, body language? Has that been something that's kind of spoken to you more than most things?
Yes, that's a smart team and an intelligent team. And you notice the Patriots use it all the time. They understand one another. It's about understanding your players, understanding what you do in practice. So the good teams, the ones that understand it, look at Peyton Manning. Those guys don't hear Peyton Manning, but look at his hands move all the time. He's basically directing them and telling them what they do. It's all hand signals also. That's why they win.
Audible-wise, how difficult is that to audible on the road?
Audible is not difficult. If you look at a quarterback, especially if they're in a shotgun, a quarterback will go to shotgun to audible all the time. Because once he goes to shotgun, receivers, you're looking at the quarterback. You're not looking at the center. If he lifts his leg up once, he's going to go through a play. If he stops and he lifts it up two more times, he's changing the play. Then he'll put his hand down and lift it up a third time, snap on. It's a lot of things that the regular fan doesn't know about the game of football that I can sit here and tell you all day. I don't think you have time for it.
Well, this is something that I definitely want to do, and that's why you and I have been talking about finding a place that can cater to this, is to get my whiteboard out, my giant whiteboard, and to run some of these plays and let people see them. Because even just you and I am a student of the game. I didn't play football for a professional team. I didn't play in college, but I did play on the concrete. I did go out there. I did run plays. We did do body language. We did try to use trickery. I got involved in a lot of different ways to the game to where you get to know it experience-wise, but then on top of that, you get to know, speaking with someone like you, the X's and O's of it and really get deep into it. And I think that that's something that would be fun for fans to see, is for us to run a play like that. So it's not just in the game, because I think if you're just sitting there as a fan and you're, okay, that was a 3-yard run, that was a 5-yard run, that was a 5-yard pass, but to see what it had to do with, and God bless you, almost sneezed. But, you know, I think it would be a lot of fun for fans to see that, because I know that I could take a lot away from that too, knowing exactly what's going on.
All right, we definitely have to do that sometime. And I tell you, that there's so much mental capacity going on during any given play that people really don't understand it.
Rob Drummond helping you out physical training-wise, but also giving you some of those mental reps that we'll be doing coming up. Here on Back on the Field with Dan Satora, Rob Drummond of the NFL, CFL, and Syracuse, and also the man that brought raps to Russell Athletic and is helping athletes all throughout the country and throughout the world, and of course helping us out here on WakeUpCallDT.com and on the SportsDT app. Appreciate it as always.
Thanks, Dan.